You're watching Finish Strong. My name is Dan Wheeler. I'm joined by Brian Rowland and Terry Steen. And you know, guys, it's been interesting moving back to my hometown after not living here for 50 years. I run into all kinds of people, and once in a while I'll run into someone from my childhood who I grew up with, played sports with. And I did that recently, and I asked this gentleman to be a guest on our podcast. And you talk about a guy that's finishing strong. He's not quite 70 years old, but he has, his resume is a mile long. And Brian, you'll appreciate the fact that he played football for the University of Michigan.
Oh, no.
Can we cut this one short? I think probably had enough.
The banter. Well, we both have our hats on. I don't know. I guess we could take them off, but he's got his shirt on.
I don't have an Iowa Hawkeye hat, but I don't have a whole lot to cheer about. Last week, they didn't even score.
That's so right.
That's right.
I'll stay quiet.
Yeah. Well, football's fun, and this was a big part of his life. We're going to talk to him all about it. But, Terry, I know you were recently at your 50-year high school reunion, and I was. And, Brian, yours was a while ago. But it's always interesting to see how people have changed or not changed and see what they're doing today.
It really is. And just, you know, you could never imagine back in high school what – all of our friends would look like, how they would mellow, what they've done with their life. And it was really interesting for me. I enjoyed it a lot when we were out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How was yours, Brian?
Oh, it was great. I mean, we had, I don't know how many hundreds of people showed up because I had almost 1,000 in my graduating class, but it was great. Deb was blown away by it. She just couldn't believe it, especially when we had prayer before dinner and that, and everybody's going, oh my gosh, you still do this? Well, we did it back then. We still do it now.
Well, our special guest tonight, I grew up with him. His name is Jim Sear. He was a big, strong kid, good in basketball and baseball, and has a brother, George. And George has a bit of a challenge in that he's deaf, but he's an amazing guy. And I always admired these two, and especially the way Jim was always kind of watching out for George. Jim was a unanimous all-conference selection at the University of Michigan his senior year, the only unanimous choice of the Big Ten. Then something happened when he went to get a physical with the Denver Broncos. It ended his career. But let's bring him in right now. Jim Sear, welcome to Finish Strong, my friend.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's nice to see you.
Great to have you with us. You made it. You tried out with the Denver Broncos, right? And it was a physical that kind of changed your career path there away from football?
Yeah, I was drafted by the Broncos. And during the course of physicals, they determined that I was playing with a compression fracture in my C5 vertebrae.
Oh, my word.
So I went back to Ann Arbor and arranged for a few interviews with neurosurgeons who all told me I could play for the glory of the school. and I had been playing, so I knew that was possible. But I actually talked to Dr. O'Connor, our team physician, and when I asked him if my name was Jim O'Connor, Dad, what would your advice be? He quietly told me that I wouldn't touch football as long as I lived. And that's when I made that decision.
Wow. I think it was probably a smart decision.
I'll never know. I'll never know if I could played or not. I'd like to think you can, but.
You can't say. You were a center, and yet you were pretty small, but you were quick, weren't you?
Yeah, well, I was 225 for the regular season. I played in the Orange Bowl against the Oklahoma Sooners, who were national champions that year by beating us by a touchdown. And I was 250 for that, or 235 for that game.
And I think you handled one of the Salmon brothers pretty well, didn't you, in that game?
I had a better game than I realized. I was really shocked the next day at a buffet dinner to have this one woman know who I was and tell me in line for a buffet that her husband thought I handled Selman. And I was like thinking this must be some bookkeeper from Ferndale, Michigan with the blue little sweater on their dog. it turns out it was Don Shula's wife, which really floored me because I had no idea how I did. And I didn't expect to get that kind of compliment from her.
How great is that?
Wow. Yeah. Well, Jim, when I look at your resume, you've been a busy man since high school and college and when we grew up here. I mean, you've been in sales management, estate planning, you co-founded a brokerage house, you've raised money for small cap companies, director of Medline Mining, co-founded Galactin Therapeutics, CEO of Minerva Biotech Corporation. My goodness, how do you have time to do anything?
Well, my love life is kind of dismal, so maybe that explains that.
Well, you made quite a living in finance and in biotech, and I guess you're still involved, right, with a lot of these companies or a few of them?
Yeah, I'm on the board right now with one of the companies I founded 23 years ago that's got a drug in clinical development right now. They're in phase 3 trials, and the drug is designed to reverse cirrhosis of the liver, which it did in phase 2. So we're hopeful that a year from now, when we're done dosing everybody in the trial, that we have comparable results and that we get an approval from the FDA.
Wow. Good. Fantastic. Well, I have a question for you, Jim. I know you played under the legendary coach, Bo Schembechler, which means you played against Woody Hayes.
That's right.
And if my records are right, you tied one game and Ohio State won 3.
They did.
Oh my.
Jim, if I'd have known that, leave it to Brian to do that research.
Painful distinction.
My question, though, was how was it playing for Bo and how was it playing against Woody?
Well, playing against Woody was actually a wonderful experience because the Ohio State team, like Michigan, was very disciplined and they played inside the lines. You didn't have to worry about anybody taking a cheap shot after the play because the coaches wouldn't permit it because they weren't going to give up a yardage because of some stupid penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct. Where if you played, there are other teams, we'll leave unnamed, where you were just glad you could still see when the game was over because people were trying to poke you in the eye and things like that. But Woody was a very intense guy. And if we had more time, maybe offline, Brian, I can share a story with you about Woody, what Bo told me about the experience where he got was let go because he hit the kid during the Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
There's actually a good explanation about that. Woody's still, in my mind, Woody's still a really classy guy.
Well, we could talk about that offline, but I just imagine playing for both of those, playing for Bo and then against Woody. A lot of people would think that they weren't friends, but they actually were really best of friends. They admired each other and they respected each other. And that was an important lesson I learned from them. And I was going to ask you about the important lessons you learned.
Well, they would meet every year, the week after the Ohio State-Michigan game in Bowling Green at Dwight Perry's house. Mm-hmm. And they were all on the same staff at one time earlier in their careers. So they were more than just that quote unquote, we respect each other. They socialized together at least that day.
That's neat.
Every year.
That's great.
What would you say were some of the best lessons you learned from Bo about life, not just football?
One of the things that Bo would challenge us with every day was that, let's start when you walked into campus as a freshman. The first day, he told you there's going to be some guys who are going to come up to you and try to convince you to commiserate with them that they're not getting a fair shake from the coaching staff and that you aren't either. And that he said, if you fall into that pit and don't get that guy's hand off your shoulder and just tell him you're getting a fair look and you're going to just be ready when it's time to be ready and you're going to work as hard as you can until that moment. But he also challenged us. One of his favorite expressions was that you have to make a decision today to get better or to get worse because it's impossible to stay the same. Mm-hmm. You're either going to practice good technique, good decision making until things become a reflex instead of a reaction. And if you're practicing lousy form and lousy reads and slow reads, well, that's what you're grooving into your subconscious. And if you're practicing exceptional, perfect form and great execution, then, when it's game time and it's on the line, you'll just exercise and it'll turn out well. But everybody I've ever played with, if you ask them, what's the one thing you remember from Bo? It's that phrase, you either get better or you get worse. You can't stay the same.
Yeah.
What's it going to be today, gentlemen? You get to decide. I can't do that for you. Mm-hmm.
Jim, that had to be devastating to have that physical report when you were trying to go to the Broncos And, you know, we believe that everything works together for good that those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Were you, I know we'll get into your faith journey in a little bit more detail, but from then, I obviously you shifted into the business world. And Dan just listed your journey in a quick overview. Did that journey take place with guidance of God? Were you following God at that time, or was that just you taking opportunities? Give us a little feel for that business journey with those multiple companies you've worked for.
Okay, well, you know, it started back when I was a freshman, and Chuck Heater walking to practice introduced me to the Lord. And I, just be totally, you know, transparent, I wrestled a little bit during college. I mean, I wasn't a wild and crazy guy, but this whole idea of turning over the direction of my life had me a little bit worried. I kind of felt like if I did that, God might make me a missionary and put me in some grass shack in sub-Saharan Africa, married to some fat, toothless woman. And, you know, I was just, you know, I was really kind of thinking it'd be kind of fun to make a few bucks and have a few niceties that my parents didn't have when I was growing up. And so I did wrestle with that. And I know I had experiences where God made his presence very, very known. My first start at Michigan was an example where I'd, it was the first time that I'd ever had anybody introduce to me the idea that you could pray about what was really on your heart and not just things that you thought you were supposed to pray for as a Christian because it was what Christians did. And it's the first time that God became personal to me. And, you know, we went out that day. I was scared to death because I was my first start, and we're playing against a guy that was leading the nation in tackles per game with 11 tackles per game after five games, which is a good season for a middle guard normally. And he had us in the first five games. But as fate would have it, we won the game that day. We set a record for the most yards ever gained by a Michigan team running the football up until that time. This guy had one tackle the whole game, and it was on the first play, so I went the wrong way. You know, and that morning, I had gone back to my room and had a very honest talk with the Lord about wanting to demonstrate to this guy and play well. And if I ever met this guy in business, that he'd remember me as the most tenacious competitor he'd ever played against. And I said, Lord, you know, big 19-year-old, too much testosterone prayer. I said, Lord, I don't want this guy to require surgery, but I want to knock this guy out. I don't want to. And I didn't knock him out, but the fourth quarter they called timeout and they helped him off the field because he couldn't go anymore. And it was a brutal day. We ran 97 offensive plays, and with Bo, 90 of them were running plays. So you know, I had a hard time walking up the tunnel myself, and this guy didn't make it without some assistance. So.
Wow.
Yeah, I was going to say in business then, you know, I would have a habit of getting involved in things and then working really hard because there'd be obstacles and eventually getting to a spot where it'd be like, okay, God, I'm out of options. I'm out of gas. I'm exhausted. My Rolodex has been gone through twice. I have no idea what I need to do. And I'm relying on you. If you want this done, you need to show me if I need to do anything or if you're taking care of it. And there was one example I remember with the biotech company. I remember a day when we couldn't make payroll on Friday, and it was a Wednesday night about 3 a.m. I got up and revisited this experience I just told you about at Michigan Stadium prior to the Wisconsin game. And I just apologized to God for, you know, doing it on my own. But I said, Lord, I don't know how we're going to make payroll. We're out of money, and I don't know where to go. And by noon the next morning, or I guess this becomes noon at or afternoon at noon, but by noon I had two phone calls from two people, both of which told me, Jim, I don't know about this exactly, but this third time I heard this voice in my head this morning telling me that I should invest money in your company, I figured I better call and get wire instructions. So we had $200,000 wired in by noon. And both people said the same thing. And I didn't ask either one of them for money.
Wow.
And so people say, do I have evidence that God's real? I don't know how else you can explain that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the business world, you see a miracle like that, and that just reinforces the blessing of God and how when we've come to the end of our road, we've done all we know to do. That's when we have to turn it over to God, isn't it? Were there any other character builders that you've had through your business years that you could share with us? Any specific
character
instances?
Builders, huh? just trying to think. I have had lots of betrayal in business. All these businesses deal with entrepreneurs and scientific people,
yeah,
who are very jealous about their invention. They're concerned about getting credit for it. So I've had, people, organize boards of directors to push me out of a company because I wasn't needed anymore. We had raised money and they had a pretty good war chest and the scientific guys were needed now. And, they were threatening to quit if they didn't get rid of me. So I've had that happen multiple times. And then I've come back to some of those companies and rescued them from financial peril. The company that's currently in phase three clinical trials, I was pushed out of that company on two different occasions and came back because you make a commitment to the guys that invest in the company early on. And just because you have an excuse that you're no longer on the team doesn't mean that you don't have the ability to help influence the outcome. And it may not be as good for you as you would have liked it to be, but you just need to take care of people who've trusted you.
So you've had to learn the lesson of forgiveness, and that's one of the hardest to learn, isn't it? We talk about that frequently on Finish Strong. Yeah.
That you're bringing up a point that is huge. I've got a situation in a biotech company where a person who's supposedly a Christian brother is been responsible for the company not doing things that it said it would do and needed to do. And the result's been a big lower stock price than what it should be. That equates to anybody. You can be subjective about it, but I can demonstrate that it's cost me personally somewhere between $5 and $20 million.
Wow.
And that's enough to be mad about. And so I remember I'm getting to be a real big fan of reading the Bible because I started doing it more conscientiously 2 years ago, and it's changed my heart completely. I mean, it's brought to my attention that parable in Matthew where it talks about how we're about the servant that was forgiven this unrepayable amount of money, but he wouldn't forgive his servant a small amount of money.
Yeah.
And when Jesus tells his disciples that the guy got tossed into prison, the debt was reinstated and tossed into prison to be tortured until he could repay. And when Jesus says that's how he's going to treat you, Dan Wheeler, if you don't forgive people from your heart, I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's not just saying it'd be a good idea and not just that I'd feel better for it in the long run. And then over in Mark, there's a verse about, asking a mountain to move and be cast into the sea and not doubting in your heart. And the verse after that says, if you find yourself praying and you have any angst against anybody, stop praying. And I'm thinking, whoa, God's word is telling me to stop praying because I haven't forgiven somebody. He doesn't want to even listen to me. What? So I've gone through this process of consciously asking him to show me, how to forgive people and how to use me instead of to use me. I've been asking him how to make me usable because, I can use somebody to, clean up my kitchen for me that is not ready to, run a NASDAQ listed company because they're not prepared. They're not usable for that. They're even though they're willing to be used and kitchen is their duty, they can handle. So I want God to use me for as big a projects as possible that where he really needs, and I want to be made ready to do that. But to give you an idea about evidence that how important this forgiveness thing is that you're talking about. Pardon for going on a rant here. You hit a really important point for me. After spending time trying to ask God to show me who I needed to forgive, and we got down to a couple of twin brothers in my fifth grade class, as far as that's how far I got in my list. I found myself in a men's group, and the guy leading it just looked horrible. He's an attorney, stays up late at night studying for courts for cases. But this time, he was up for five nights in a row because of pain in his neck, and he did look terrible. So we prayed for him, and instead of the prayers that I would have had years ago about begging God to heal him, I thought about Mark 11:23, where he says, "Speak to this mountain and tell it to be moved and be cast into the sea. And if you don't doubt it in your heart, you just know who you are in God's minds and the authority He's given you, yeah. And it'll eventually happen." So I just got, I don't know, there was this moment where I just felt a little righteous anger, and I just told this pain it had to go in Jesus' name. I was quoting, Second Peter, where it talks about how by His stripes we're healed. I was quoting Mark 11:23. And anyway, long story short, Jeff sent us all a message the next day saying that it took him 15 minutes to get home. By the time he got home, the pain was gone completely.
Wow. And, that's neat.
You know, and then 2 weeks later, I get this teaching about the sower and the seed. And we all know about the four types of soil. But the important thing was at the end of that, there's a message where Jesus tells his disciples, if you don't understand this, you won't understand anything. And that is that the sower plants the seed. He doesn't know how it happens. But it grows, makes a plant, eventually there's an ear, and ultimately there's a harvest, and it's 30, 60, 100 fold. Mm-hmm. And that harvest, that increase is not a bunch of seed on some farmer's truck. That increase is in your heart, in my heart, and the seed is God's mm-hmm. word. And he's saying that we don't know how it happens, but there's this huge increase. And and so I want all of that I can get. I don't know where this goes from here. I just know that I'm having the more I talk about God and the more I share with people, the more people He puts in front of me to share with, and the more joy is ending up in people's lives. And I have no idea where this train ride is going to go, but I'm on the train, and I'm really happy to be here. And forgiveness, wow! I share that story with people, and you know it cracks me up. Is they'll say these things like, oh, yes, well, that's really important. And, you know, the person who doesn't forgive, that's the one that gets hurt the most because mm-hmm. you're only hurting yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if you question them, they'll be like, yeah, I'll try to do that, you know. Except there's this one guy, John Johnson, son of a gun.
Yeah.
And it's like, really? We're just, you know.
You've got to forgive everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know I feel like I'm sounding self-righteous here because this is only a recent phenomenon. The first 67 years, I was like that guy I'm telling you about that, you know, forgave because it was good for me.
The name of the podcast is Finish Strong, and you've taken us through your faith journey beautifully there. I just want to say that, you know, 4 years ago, you and I reconnected. I was speaking at Shoes here in town, and you brought your brother, George, and that was a great time. And you got my book, Hurricane of Love. And it's been great to reconnect with you again this summer at a Lee Greenwood concert and kind of through your sister. And I always admired your relationship with George. Even as a young kid, I always felt like you guys were so tight and you were always kind of watching out for him because, you know, he was deaf. But he's done extremely well, and you guys, you could tell you were brothers. Really, there was a deep bond between you.
Oh well, George is the one that looked out for me too. I mean, I'll never forget being an elementary school kid playing foursquare at Kiwanis Park, and these three older guys were giving us a hard time and dominating the game, and I had to object when I got knocked out in the first square that they were cheating. And the guy walks over to me and puts his fingers in my chest like, and what are you going to do about it, big boy, you know, because he was a couple years older than me. My brother George steps out of line in broken English. He just touches the guy on his chest and says, my brother.
Like, that's great. That's
just so great. Just so you know.
That's
so
yeah. Well, we've got to get to your current involvement, which is signed 1776. You told me about this, and I was fascinated. Just give us an idea of what this is all about and how you got involved.
I got involved. I was at a conservative gathering, and I met a guy that I was impressed with, who was a producer of Hollywood movies, as far as the special effects, and he worked on Avatar and films like that. But he was a conservative, and so I became a friend. And in the course of his friendship, he says, "Jim, I'm going to start this Declaration of Independence project." He said, "I was listening to Levin's show the other day, and he was talking about what happened to the people who signed the Declaration of Independence." He said, "It's horrible." He's talking about guys that, you know, lost fortunes. And when we say fortunes, I mean Thomas Nelson from Virginia. I mean, he used his business connections to arrange for $2 million loan to outfit some naval ships. And without him, they wouldn't have won the war. And when it was over, the state of Virginia said, "I'm sorry, we don't have any legal obligation to repay you." And the U.S. government said the same thing. So here's a guy that ended up penniless, lost $2 million in 1776 coinage. Imagine how many, you know, billions that would have been today.
Oh my goodness.
And then there was a guy named Morris who used his business lines of credit and stuff to outfit with armaments and ammunitions and food. And again, without these, you know, and people had their houses turned into barns, and people had their relatives arrested and imprisoned, and a lot of them were killed or hung. I mean, so anyway, he was moved to look into it. And as we looked into it, we started realizing what a great document it was, and that it reiterated that our rights are inalienable rights that God has given us.
Right.
As people, as his children, and that they don't come from government. And we looked at what happened with the COVID situation, and without getting into, you know, vax, anti-vax, and all that sort of thing, I'm just talking about how government just made decisions and forced those behaviors on all of us. And I look at the centralization of government, how they keep chipping away at the rights that we have at the state level. And you look at the high school kids and what they're teaching, and you sit there and scratch your head and think, where does this all go? You know? And so we've been trying to solicit signatures to get people to re-sign the Declaration of Independence. And we're pushing 90,000 signatures. We'd like to have 3% of the country sign. We're getting a lot of resistance from Google. They have 60% of the email addresses of people in this country are Gmail addresses, and they have blocked our emails because they're, quote, political. And they claim, and political not in the way that they like it, but I'm asking myself, how could a founding document that assures the liberty of every American, you know, citizen, whether we're a Democrat, a Libertarian, or a Republican, or an independent, or a Buddhist, or a Marxist, or a communist, or a Christian, or a patriot, how can that be political when it's saying that these are God-given rights, and if you know, and we need to protect them? So we just thought that this would be a way of getting people to talk about it, and I've found in my own conversations with people, because I'm not afraid to get someone talking. It's kind of a sport for me to get somebody talking about something, particularly if they're on the other side of the political aisle from where I'm coming from. And I'll always just tell them, I say, you know, I really enjoy talking to people like you because we both have so much in common. They look at me like I'm nuts. And I say, well, we're both looking for the truth. Right. And I said, fortunately, we have this Declaration of Independence and the Constitution that we have so that you and I can have this conversation. If we didn't, then the king would tell us, or the governor or the dictator would tell us what the narrative of was allowed, and both of us would be in jail for having these opinions and discussing it.
Right.
And so we'd like to try to help unite people around a common cause, because we're being divided by differences. And if you look at the playbook of the Marxist and Hitler and any of the other, you know, dictators, it's all about getting people divided, fracturing your society, and then playing them off against each other and making everybody mad and angry. And, you know, and that's just so un-Christ-like.
And changing history. And that's what we see. People are wanting to change history in the school books. That's why what you're doing is so important. How do people get involved? I went on and I signed, and I was proud to do that. And, you know, you think, boy, Those guys gave their lives, their honor, their fortune. The signer is the original one. The least we can do is put our name on it.
Can you explain the process, though? I don't think...
Yeah, the process is you can go to www.sign1776.com and just follow the directions. If you run into a problem, email me at jimczirr@outlook.com and I'll see what I can do about getting you straightened out. Now, we do have a goal, and the goal is that we've got some Congress people who are willing to do this that are going to meet us on the Capitol steps, and we are going to present these additional signatures to Congress. And the people that we're working with, whether they can pull it off or not, we don't know, but they're going to try to get a bill passed that would recognize these signatures as an addendum to the original Declaration of Independence by the American citizenry of 2023. Yes. And we just want people to be grateful for the liberty that we have. And it's, this gentleman was not necessarily a very religious person whose idea this was, but the more he studies it, he says to me, he says, Jim, this had to be something that God endorsed, because look what they did. They overthrew the largest military power in the history of the world as a ragtag team of colonists, and only 3% of the colony members who lived here actually fought in the revolution.
And it
wasn't all, the people who signed it weren't all powerful political people. There were pastors of churches. There were, small merchants. There were people that were in their 20s. There were people who were in their 80s. It was just incredible.
Well, I can't believe the time. It's just flown by. And Jim, I had no idea you were going to be at this level, truly all conference, all American when it comes to a podcast guest. You did a great job.
You're very kind, Dan. You're very kind.
And you really are an example of finishing strong. Our philosophy is we don't want to retire to a golf course or to a pickleball court. We want to go hard for the Lord and give it everything, because our goal is to hear when we stand before Him, well done, good and faithful servant. And I know that you don't need to be involved in this, but you're really following your heart and you're giving it everything. Sign1776.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Go there, sign your name. Let's uphold that Declaration of Independence is such a powerful document, inalienable rights given us to us by God. Well, Jim, we'll be praying for you, and I'll be staying in good touch. It's so great to see you again. Yep.
Well, one comment: if anybody would video themselves and then post it on Facebook, video themselves signing and post it on Facebook, that would also help the cause.
And they post it on Facebook just on their page, or?
Yeah, just on their page with their friends, showing that, hey, I signed the Declaration of Independence and inviting you to do the same.
Absolutely. Great. That's great. Well, thanks so much, Jim. We're going to wrap up here, but it's been great having you as a guest and great reconnecting with you after all these years.
Yeah, thanks, likewise.
Jim. I'm a fan, thank Jim. You. I'm a fan.
Maybe we should talk offline about it and give you that Woody story. You'd be impressed.
That sounds good.
All right. Okay. Thank you,
gentlemen. Jim. Bye-bye.
Well, I'll tell you guys, it was great having Jim on. So many lessons that he learned in sports and the business world. What stood out to you guys?
I'll tell you, I think the thing that stood out to me, of course, being an Ohio State fan, was when he talked about Bo and Woody, but what Bo did as a coach and how he told them that you could get better or get worse, and it's your choice. You can't just stay the same. Throughout life, you're going to have to get better, or it's going to get worse. And I thought that was excellent when he brought that up, because that should be stated in every locker room going back to, midget league. I mean, that is really worse to live by. And you can see how he's done that through his life and through his business too.
Right. How about you, Terry?
Yeah, for me, it was interesting that, and just like all of us, there could be what would seem like the lowest time in our life. he lived his life wanting to play football, got that report about he could never play again. Right. And look how God took that, turned it around, and has given him this incredible path. All those experiences he's had, all those companies he's been able to like lead and be a part of, and all the peoples he's influenced, that God took him on a different path, highly successful. Now he's doing something for our country. And it just, to see how God can turn what we think is bad into something good is a great lesson in itself.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting for me to hear that his faith journey actually started as a Michigan football player, and the things that he would pray for before the games, and then how he's come back to that. Mm-hmm. You know, and the real story is nobody has a problem-free life. You think, wow, all conference at Michigan, and then heading all these boards and everything. But, you know, people are people, and we're always going to have trouble in this world. But God says, take good cheer. I've overcome the world.
Right.
And that is our hope. But another great lesson, guys, of a person who's really finishing strong. He's almost 70 years old. He doesn't show any signs of slowing down.
No, he really doesn't.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Well, it was great to have him on and great to be with you guys again. And I hope that you who are watching will let us know you enjoy Finish Strong. And again, follow us on Fearless Faith on Facebook. It's just at FFM60. Until next time, God bless. Let's all finish strong.
Thank you for listening to Finish Strong. For more information about Finish Strong and Fearless Faith, check out their website, ffaith.org. Make sure that you rate and review this podcast to help more people accomplish their God-given purpose so that together we can finish strong.